And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Got a lot to get to on the program here today. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, joining the show at 7:30. Paul Kuharsky at 8 o'clock to look ahead to Titans and Broncos. You'll hear from Charles Robinson coming up later this hour at 6:30. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How we doing?
Doing great. Better than the Preds. How are you?
I think you are certainly doing better than the Nashville Predators. I'm doing very well. Michelle, good morning. What's going on?
Good morning, guys. Doing great. Going to have a great show today. It's hump day. We're halfway through the week.
We are. We are on the road this week. So, rough one last night for the Nashville Predators, Joe Rexroad. They fall 5-1 at the hands of what I would call a surprising and surging Seattle Kraken team who moved to 8-4-2 on the season last night. So a nice start for the Kraken. The Predators, meanwhile, unable to build really any momentum at the moment. Losing 5-1 last night. Saros gets pulled after allowing 4 goals on 6 shots. And the Predators were just never in that one last night. So after 2 wins in a row, you have a what I think was clearly your best performance of the season against Calgary on the road on Thursday night last week. You followed up with a come-from-behind win in Vancouver, where the first half of the game you got totally dominated. In the second half, you come back and you win in the shootout on Saturday, and you just get your doors blown off last night. Joe, there's a lot to sort through right now. The long and the short of it to me is this. They're not a very good hockey team. Like, they're not good right now. And, you know, there's time to dig yourself out of that, and that could change. But right now, it's very simple. They're just not a good hockey team. And they've had moments where they've looked okay so far this year. And like I said, the Calgary game was really good. They've had moments in other games where they've looked really good. But by and large, they have been incredibly inconsistent. And last night, like I said, they were just never in the game. And they had some brutal turnovers last night that led to goals in front of their own net. Had some really poor play in terms of defensive zone coverage at times. A lot of it of that was turnover related as well. But also, Joe, like, UC Saros is not good right now. He's not. And the numbers would suggest that. The first goal of the game last night was just brutal. It can't happen. Jordan Eberle has got a slap shot from above the top of the right circle that you need your goaltender to stop 100 times out of 100. And it goes in the back of your net, and all of a sudden you're down 1-0. And I had somebody on Twitter ask me this last night, Joe, how many times Saros has allowed a goal within the first 3 shots of the game. That was the 6th time in 10 starts for Saros last night that they've allowed a goal within the first 3 shots of the game. So, I mean, they're just digging a hole for themselves right from the jump in these games.
Yeah, that was a terrible goal, no question. And then you have terrible turnovers. McDonough, Niederreiter, you know, I mean, the rest of the onslaught in the first period was mostly in front of him. But, you know, of course, you're right. I mean, he's been way below his level. I agree. They're just not good right now. Is McDonough – I don't want to overreact to McDonough, but, like, Is this possibly going to be a Clowney Julio type of situation where a Nashville team gets someone who was something way different before they got here, and then all of a sudden you realize it's just not the same anymore?
Well, it's looked really bad so far, and I have, you know, I've got some patience in an 82 game season, especially with guys like that who have been around a long time and who have done it at a high level. But right now, I mean, he's not very good, and you know, I think he's had some games this year where he's looked like Ryan McDonough, but I thought he was horrible last night, and he's been bad on several occasions this year. So that is a deep concern to me right now. And, Joe, that goes back to, you know, the guy's played a ton of hockey. He's been around a long time. He's done a whole lot of winning, but he's also 33 years old. And right now the whole team just looks slow. And They just look like they're getting beat to every puck. They're having trouble keeping up with teams in transition. They just look slow right now. And I think some of that is not really foot speed. It's more decision-making with what they've got going on, and then you're in scramble mode after that. But, no, I am I am concerned about Ryan McDonagh. There's no question.
Yeah, and not just his age, but I mean, how many springs has he played an extra 30 games or whatever it is, right? Yeah. Or, you know, whatever the number is. He stacked those on top of each other. I mean, that kind of actually adds to your age in this game, right? It just adds to the mileage.
For sure.
Yeah, so because obviously, we talked earlier about, okay, McDonagh, you know, McDonagh at home, probably not going to work. And I know part of that is Ekholm switching sides. He's just obviously more comfortable on his natural side, but I don't know, man. That one's a concern. I mean, they do have Forsberg going. So, you know, it's like all their high-paid guys, it's not like that's a thing. The power play, I don't know. I didn't think it looked very good last night again.
No, I mean, it's just there's nothing that they're doing right now that they're doing well on a consistent basis. Nothing. I mean, defensively, it's not going well on a consistent basis. A goaltending with Saros in there, I don't think it's been very good. Power plays up and down. I mean, it's just they're really inconsistent right now. And look, you're 5-7-1. That's a really disappointing start for this group. And I know people are gonna say, well, look at the standings, look at some other teams. I do not care. I do not care about other teams. St. Louis has lost 8 games in a row. I do not care. It has nothing to do with the Predators. And, you know, quite frankly, that's excuse making around here that's been done too much. I don't care. This team should be better than they've been so far. And, you know, I think a lot of it is as simple as when your goaltender is not playing near the top of his game, that's a problem for you. And I think you and I are both well aware, and everybody that's watched this team is well aware of how much he's probably covered up over the course of the past couple of years with the way that he's played in goal. And when you're not getting that from him, it's hard to win that way. Now, having said that, to me, there is no excuse for this team to be as bad defensively as they've been. And some of that is just as simple as, well, quit turning the puck over and you won't be that bad defensively. I mean, that was kind of the case last night in the first period of take better care of the hockey puck. And that's at least 2 goals that you're not giving up there. So some of it's as simple as that. But with McDonagh, Yossi, who I don't think has been very good so far this year, Ekholm I think has been better since they made the switch. But they got too many guys that have been good players in this league for a long time to be as bad as they've been defensively. And you can throw the forwards in there too. Like, it's their job to defend as well. And they just got problems up and down the board right now. So, look, I sense a great deal of frustration from Predators fans, justifiably so. I've said this a lot. You and I have been very patient with the coach. We've talked about the general manager and his status with the team. Right now, they're a mess. And it's time to – we're closing in on Thanksgiving. It's time to get it figured out. And you're approaching the point when you get to Thanksgiving. We talk about this every year. Maybe sometimes you just are what you are. And – I'm not willing to go there yet with the Predators because I do have faith that at some point Saros is going to snap out of this, but right now they're a bad hockey team.
Yeah, I mean, if they are what they are, boy, what a few months ahead we have.
Yeah.
on the future of the Preds front. I mean, I'm doing a mailbag, you know, for the Athletic, you know, for tomorrow, and there's a by far most popular question, which is basically, is Hines going to get fired? Is Poile going to get fired? Or are Hines and Poile going to get fired? You know, I mean, that's the fan base's. And again, that doesn't mean that's necessarily the whole fan base's mindset, but I think a lot of people have that on their mind. Of course, there's also people asking if John Robinson's going to get fired. So, you know, look, people like to ask about people getting fired. Okay. Yes. But no, that's, And look, this question, and this is just, look, I'm not qualified to answer this, but, and I kind of reject the idea, but I do get a lot of, is it just that the Hines system is just, you can't really win big with his system? I just, like, to me, my first impulse there is like, I mean, they're playing hockey. I don't think it's some non-starter, or it's some limitation, like his actual system. But no. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think the system thing is maybe the most overblown thing in sports when it comes to a hockey coach. It's probably not the most overblown thing in sports, but it's up there. Like, a lot of hockey is reading and reacting. Yes, there are systems. There's a defensive zone coverage structure that you need to have in place. There's a plan of attack that you've got offensively in place. I mean, you can talk about neutral zone coverage. You can talk about getting in on the forecheck, everything that goes into that. But by and large, Joe, I mean, the systems from team to team, most of the time, usually aren't that different. I mean, you've got some different systems. It's not like everybody does the exact same thing, but it ain't that different. Like, I don't think the system is really the problem right now. Now, I'm not absolving John Hines of blame. Look, to me, everything's on the table right now with the way that they played. Sure. But
sure,
a lot of this is, I mean, look at the game last night. You have a goalie that couldn't stop the puck on the first shot, and the other two goals to begin that part of it. Actually, it was goal two came on transition after a turnover, and the Predators got caught flat-footed. Goal three was a turnover from McDonough, and goal four was a turnover from Niederreiter. Like, we could talk about system, but that have anything to do with the system? You just turned the puck over, and you didn't stop the puck.
Yeah, I mean, the whole system thing, like at the end there with Laviolette, you know, these people sending me all these blue blobs proving to me why his system can't work. I'm like, guys, he's been in the NHL. I think he knows how to have a system. Like, I mean, now is his voice running out in the room and stuff like that? Sure, that I can get, but yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know why I always want to make football hockey comparisons, but it's kind of like this, the default to the OC, right?
Yeah.
Not that the OC in a team can't be bad or deserve firing, but like, it's just the easy thing to do. And not almost always, but very often overblown.
Well, and look, we've talked about David Poile and his status with the team, and particularly his status with the ownership group. I don't really expect anything to happen there. I understand fans asking questions about Poile and asking questions about Hines. I do. I mean, I understand the frustration. But I said this last night on Twitter, and you can think whatever you want to think. You can call me an idiot. You can do whatever you want. This is just the way I feel. Preds have had three coaches in 25 years. Like, just based on their track record, I don't really expect them to be a team that has the quick trigger on the coach this year. That's just me. Could be wrong, but the track record would suggest that there's not much danger of him getting fired at the moment. Now, again, this totally falls off the wheels, then maybe we're having a different discussion. But, Joe, I think the Predators have demonstrated they are way more patient than most, maybe patient to a fault at times.
Well, for sure. And, I mean, with Poile, I mean, that's a totally – just separate it from basically how pro sports work for the most part. But – with Hines, like let's take Hines's tenure here and just translate it to, I mean, you translate it to any other team in the league. I don't think he'd be I think with it, now with some teams in this league, it is fast, really fast. But I think for most of them, he wouldn't be like on the verge of being fired right now.
I don't think so. I mean, look, they're 5-7-1. It's not like they're, you know, 2-10-2 or whatever it would be. I mean, it's a problem right now. There's no question about it. There is still some time to turn things around, but I totally understand the frustration from Predators fans. This team has been an absolute disappointment thus far through the early going in the season. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the college football playoff rankings that were released last night and what it could mean for the Tennessee Vols as they move forward here. But first, Joe Rexroad has a word from OrderGreen.com.
I do have a word from OrderGreen.com, the nation's number one online shop for all things cannabis. Wide selection of high-quality THC, CBD products, edibles, gummies, vapes, flower. Fantastic benefits physically, mentally for me, for very good friends of mine, for a family friend who has a serious illness going on. And OrderGreen.com has been very, very beneficial for her. At OrderGreen.com, they have a team with extensive knowledge for their products. This makes you know you're receiving the highest of quality, and you're getting nationwide same-day delivery right to your doorstep. You get 25% off every shipment of gummies with a subscription to OrderGreen.com. If you use promo code JOE20, you get 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Wednesday morning. Joe, the college football playoff rankings, the latest rankings are out. Georgia at number one, to nobody's surprise. Ohio State at two. Michigan at three. TCU moves into the top four. Tennessee's at five, Oregon at six. So we said yesterday, maybe five. I think five was the number I threw out. I think you threw out five, too, with where Tennessee would be in the college football playoff rankings. That's where they are. And that led to a wide range of discussions last night on Vol Twitter about how in the world is TCU's resume not better than Alabama's last week, but after taking down Texas Tech, all of a sudden it's better than Tennessee's. Tennessee's at five ahead of Oregon at the moment. LSU, by the way, at number seven after beating Alabama. What were your thoughts, Joe, on the release of the college football playoff rankings last night and Tennessee being at number five?
Well, first of all, the committee continues to be a complete clown show.
Yes. I mean,
it is. It's actually hilarious that like a week ago, they're like, well, TCU keeps falling behind in these games, and that's why they're seventh. When they came out at seventh, I picked TCU third last week.
Yeah.
So I'm like, seventh? Are you kidding me? Okay, so this week, by the way, my prediction was exactly right. Thank you.
Attaboy.
So I do predict some things correctly, like one out of every 20 things. However, the explanation from Boo Corrigan is just amazingly hilarious. Like, wow, their ability to come back is so impressive. Like, last week, you nailed them for falling behind, and now this week, it's like, they come back! Okay! Both things were true both times. Why the change? It's bizarre. But it doesn't matter. I mean, in the Tennessee universe, it doesn't matter. TCU wins out, wins the Big 12, they're going to be in.
Yes.
TCU loses a game, they're going to be out. That's it. I mean, TCU is simple. The TCU thing's simple. Root like crazy for the other UT Saturday night. They got game day in town. They got TCU at their place in primetime. They take care of business for you, buy TCU, and then you worry about the other stuff. Ultimately, my takeaway is Tennessee's in very good shape, but I do think, and, you know, Blake Topmeyer did a good job of asking this of Boo, which I love, by the way. You know, it's like, thanks, Boo.
I wasn't going to say it, but you did, so we'll go there. That's awesome.
Hey, can you tell me about the playoff, Boo? Have a good night, Boo. But, you know, Blake asked him, the question about, and I saw that you were outraged about this. I don't think you and I totally agree on this. Because there's still got to be, there still should be some distinguishing. But basically, what he meant is like they're not, you know, dissecting total margin of victory. It's like, did a team control a game and basically handle a team, or did they not? So if that's your standard, then you look at the Georgia wins over Oregon and Tennessee essentially the same. Now, I think that's fine. I mean, Tennessee, it wasn't a 14-point game. They got their butts smoked. Okay,
it also wasn't a 46-point game. But I hear you.
Yeah, and the thing is, I do think an important point to make is, although I know that was like a Georgia crowd that Oregon played in front of, it wasn't what Tennessee saw Saturday. But look, here's the thing. If Oregon wins out, because Oregon has – they have blown out UCLA, and UCLA has they're 12th now. That's a good win.
Yep.
They got Utah coming up. They're 13th. Beat them. Okay. They get USC, who's 8th. In the Pac-12 title game, and they beat them, Oregon's going to be in.
Yeah.
I mean, Oregon's going to leapfrog Tennessee, and the conference championship is going to help. And their resume will actually be, like, very good at that point. So that is a concern if you're Tennessee. You know, if you're a Tennessee fan, you want Oregon to lose. But if you get rid of TCU, two things that I think are reasonably realistic. One, TCU loses. And then I think Ohio State beating Michigan.
Yeah.
Because if Michigan beats Ohio State, Notre Dame win actually is now providing value to Ohio State. And Ohio State can, you know, because again, it doesn't matter. people have got to stop talking about you beat this ranked team at this time or that time. That doesn't matter. It's what the value, the strength of the win changes over time. The Notre Dame strength of win has changed a lot in Ohio State's favor. So they actually have – they would have some kind of argument if it was them in Tennessee for the last spot. But if Ohio State beats Michigan with their awful non-league, I don't think Michigan has a case against Tennessee.
Agreed.
And we're seeing that the committee thinks that way too. So basically, you know, TCU loses and Ohio State beats Michigan, and you're going to be in. Now, there's still the Oregon thing, which can go your way too. And then there's, of course, the LSU discussion, which, I mean, hey, I must say, I don't think it's going to happen because Georgia's probably going to blow their doors off. But boy, is that an interesting one. Like, just a really fascinating one. And I just, like, I saw Wes last night. Like, that's not even a discussion. I'm like, Wes, buddy, you're not, it's not true that it's not a discussion.
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, it's a joke. They're two lost
teams. I disagree.
They're a two lost team, Joe, which by itself has never been put in the college football playoff. And if it comes down to a comparison between LSU and Tennessee, Tennessee went on the road to their place and won by 4 touchdowns. It's not a comparison.
Oh, I know what happened. I know what happened. But first of all, the SEC champion also has never been left out, and that's insane to think about. And second of all, that is the best win. If LSU beats Georgia, now there is a new best win, plus Ole Miss, plus Alabama, with the SEC champion.
It doesn't matter. They lost by 4 touchdowns. The job of the committee is to put the best 4 teams in. There is no argument that LSU is a better team than Tennessee. You cannot make it. They lost by 4 touchdowns at home.
See, I think that, and you've had this sentiment before, and I think we've had this argument before. That's not true. You can't, because teams change. Teams change during the year.
Then what are we playing the schedule for? Do the head-to-head games not mean anything?
Of course they do. I would still pick Tennessee. Of course they do. Of course they're part of it. But you're trying to dismiss these other things I just said. You can't dismiss those things.
They can't just be
wiped away by the head-to-head. Yeah, they have 2 losses. And that's another thing. Florida State now is a ranked loss. Look, there's never been a 2-loss team. But the SEC champion with the best win in college football, with arguably the best collection of wins in college football, there's where history's made, the first 2-loss team. Again, I'd pick Tennessee because the head-to-head happened at LSU and it was overwhelming. But I'm saying you can't sit here and say, that's not a discussion. I mean, last night it was a discussion, and they're 7th right now.
Yeah, well, first off, like you said, I think Georgia would beat LSU by about 35 points. So I don't think it's going to end up mattering all that much. But I will tell you, like, if LSU got in over Tennessee, I might burn down my house. Like, it would be an absolute joke. There's zero argument for it. I don't care what you or anybody else says. There's zero argument for it. Zero.
But that's not – there's not zero.
They lost by 4 touchdowns to Tennessee, Joe. It's not that complicated. We're searching way too hard for answers here that don't exist.
No. Look, again, I'm picking Tennessee in that scenario, but all the stuff I just said about the wins over Georgia, the championship of the SEC, how are those things not factors?
Because teams, if the comparison is between Tennessee, it's on the field already decided.
Yeah. Again, I'm picking Tennessee for that reason. This is not a discussion. That's just not true. I mean, teams can change during the season. So we've talked about, what if Tennessee got a rematch? You know, what if Tennessee got a rematch against Georgia? Maybe they will. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what would happen. If Tennessee and LSU played right now, what would happen? I don't know.
Like, they would kick their ass like they did 3 weeks ago.
Okay. Maybe. I feel like LSU, it seems like that game may have kicked LSU in the butt. They looked like a different team to me, but I don't know. Hey, like you said, they've played, and that result, to me, would give them the edge. And I don't think we're going to have this scenario. But, God, now I'm kind of rooting for it because, boy, would it be fast. Because one of those 2 fan bases would be, utterly melted down. Because if you're an LSU fan, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're the SEC champion. Just beat Georgia. What do you mean we're not in the playoff? Of course we're in the playoff.
Don't lose to Florida State and Tennessee. Like, it's not that hard. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, you'll hear a conversation from Charles Robinson on the Titans. We'll get into the Colts situation with Frank Reich and Jeff Saturday. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, to welcome in one of our favorites, Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How you doing?
We're great. Thanks for taking time to be with us. So what's your thoughts on this situation in Indy? Frank Reich fired yesterday, and Jeff Saturday, the choice as the interim head coach. I can't say I had that one coming, but what'd you make of the moves made by Jim Irsay in Indianapolis?
That had to be probably one of the more Looney Tunes press conferences I've ever seen, to be honest with you, yesterday. You sat there, and I listened to Irsay talk about, you know, oh, I've been around the game 52 years. I don't know how to make sausage, but I know how to make football teams. he at one point he talked about, you know, watching, learning how to, you know, the week goes with Ted Marchabrota. I was like, that was like 30 years ago. Like, what is this guy talking about? Doing installs with Ted Marchabrota in the 90s. He talked about in this weird riff how, like, analytics was hard and how much he loved Al Davis and, you know, Paul Brown. I was like, does this guy know what decade it is? He keeps talking about football from, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And to me, that's really what this was about. I sat there and I'm like, he's reaching for, it's like this, you know, old owner clinging to this, you know, fading photograph that's yellowed and just, you know, he wants the good old days of Peyton Manning and Jeff Saturday. It's outside the box. Maybe it works. We'll see. But I think it was stunning. So everybody around the league, everybody had the same reaction. I think all of us did. And it's, you know, the quintessential example of Jeff Saturday having been a paid consultant, as you know, Irsay revealed for years, and you listen to someone, you think their ideas are good, and when things go bad, you sit there and you convince yourself that this is the person that needs to be in here, and, you know, we'll see if what Saturday can do the next 8 games. I know the league office is sitting there going, wow, we never considered whether the Rooney Rule could be a problem in this kind of way where, you know, somebody could go and make a coach an outside the or make their head coach an outside the box hire in the middle of the season, and just say, "Well, we complied with the Rooney Rule because he's the interim." That was not it. I'll say this: that was not an interim press conference. Watch the whole thing. I'm like, that's the head coach press conference. That's as head coach as it can get. This isn't just some guy coming in expected to be there for 8 games. So this is designed to be a long haul thing. We'll see if Saturday can actually pull it together enough the final 8 games to make that a reality.
Yeah, Irsay had a comment on the Rooney Rule question too. Really, you know, really smart stuff. Like, I was a broadcast major and I do this. I mean, I don't even know what the heck he was rambling on about.
Joe, he keeps talking. Yeah, I was like, when was 1940? I'm like, when? Like, how long is it? It was blowing my mind. Like, he was talking about, we don't, you know, football hasn't changed. You know, we're not rocket scientists here. We're not building, you know, rockets to go to Mars or whatever. I'm like, football has changed. It's not the same as it was. He talked about Don Shula in, like, the 60s, right? And he's like, football hasn't changed. I'm like, I'm pretty sure in 60 years, football's changed a little bit. Not hard to figure out, you know, the number of ways that it's changed. And the Rooney Rule thing, it was really funny, too. At one point, he goes, we were following the Rooney Rule to a T. I'm like, You know when you look at a law and you're like, are we following this to a T? You usually do that when you're like, I might be breaking the law here. That's when you usually try to make that
yeah, out. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, man. So the rest of this year, they're also adamant they're not tanking. But, I mean, wouldn't it actually work out well for them to lose as much as possible here and try to get one of these quarterbacks? Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, when it first happened, my thought process was, and I literally told my editor, I'm like, this is a tank. Like, this is a tank move. Like, it's genius. This is great. Go get the guy who's a fan favorite in Indianapolis. No one's really going to expect a lot out of it. If he goes 0-8, you know, he won't get the job, and, you know, you get some headlines or whatever. And ultimately, what will happen is Irsay will get what he wants, which is he wants the quarterback situation solved. And it was funny because right before Reich was fired, I had a conversation with somebody in the building on Friday. And they told me, I said, what's going on there? What's the vibe? And he said, I think Frank's going to make it. And he said, I'm paraphrasing here, but he's like, look, you know, Jim's big thing is we got to resolve this quarterback thing in a way that's long-term, done, finished, no more patchwork stuff. And he basically communicated that he was going to be patient with Frank through the rest of the season, which, you know, he had also, I think he said publicly that he was going to stick it out with Frank. Then things, they go into New England. Obviously the offense looks the way it looks. And I think he thought it was lethargic. I think he snapped after seeing that game and watching, Sam Ehlinger get, you know, sacked 9 times and just look horrible. But like you said, the silver lining here is if this totally falls apart and they, you know, they go in eight, they're sitting there staring at, you know, Bryce Young. You know, they're going to potentially look at drafting one of these quarterbacks in the first round of what should be a strong quarterback draft. And then potentially resolved if you get the right guy. So I get it if that's sort of what he's leaning into. But if you watch that press conference, I don't know. It didn't feel like a tank when I watched that press conference. It felt like a guy who really thought he was making the, you know, hire Don Shula in, you know, 1962 move. That's really honestly what it felt like he thought he was doing. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think that's it. So, you know, we'll see. The roster's not changing. Jeff Saturday at least can affect that offensive line, which is amazing how bad that group is for them this season, and maybe that helps a little bit, but I just don't think you're going to see the Colts get exponentially better from here on out.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Charles, what have been your impressions of the Titans so far this year? They're at 5-3, good defensive performance on Sunday night in Kansas City. Their offense outside of Derrick Henry is tough to watch. Overall, what have been your thoughts on the Titans?
Yeah, look, Downing's, you know, he's got some work to do. I think, obviously, if you look over the expanse of the season, and then obviously also historically how good the coordinating has been at that position under Mike Vrabel, you know, Todd Downing is not quite living up to the standard right now. You know, the one thing is when they play well, it was funny because we always do this Sunday night wrap up of all the games, and it feels like it's a team that under Mike Vrabel, as much as any other coach in the league, they kind of stick to who they are. They know who they are. I mean, it's a team that is designed to run the ball well, wear teams out, play really good defense. Nico Autry's been amazing. What an addition since he's been in Tennessee. But look, the quarterback play, obviously, whether you want to say it's, you know, injuries or whatever, just the natural decline of where the position's gone, is problematic. Wide receivers are nothing to, at this point, I don't think anything to write home about. It's, you know, it sucks that AJ Brown's chosen to wade into that at this point, especially after getting paid, you know, make the point that, oh, it looks like nobody's getting open. You know, so you can kind of see where the deficits are talent-wise. And unfortunately, when you look around the rest of the AFC, you want to be built right now to compete. You got to be built to compete with Buffalo, okay? You got to be built to compete with Miami offensively. And even though I think defensively people are getting over their skis a little bit with Miami just because they went out and got Bradley Chubb, you know, I think even defensively you look at Miami and Buffalo, and they have a chance to put up, you know, special games. There's no question about that. So as much as I like Tennessee and I like the job that Mike Vrabel's done, I think you get into the, you know, into the playoffs and you're going to run into a similar problem, you know, as every other year. You're going to sit there and go, okay, well, if it's Tannehill and Tannehill's healthy, how do we match up offensively? You know, how do we match up at the wide receiver position with some of these other teams? That's what Tennessee, I think, has to work on moving forward, is they've got to build themselves to compete offensively and not just defensively. I like playoff level defense. I think when they're, you know, healthy, the New York Jets playoff healthy, you know, or playoff level defense, great, you know, maybe even New England playoff level defense. But when you run into these offenses in the AFC playoffs, it's going to be problematic. And I don't think, you know, like a Super Bowl window is realistic until that gets resolved.
Well, Charles, you started that answer talking about Downing. And of course, it's almost like a chicken and egg discussion here that we have a lot, which is the personnel is such a problem. You trade AJ Brown, which to me was a huge mistake. Yeah. You lose Taylor Lewan, but at the same time, I mean, I agree. I mean, Todd Downing has not been as good as Arthur Smith. But what is the feeling about Todd Downing from people in the league who are you know, deeply familiar with his work as an OC?
I got to be honest. I mean, it's not like I've had a ton of Todd Downing conversations with people around the league in terms of his career, but I will say this. I don't think you have anybody out there saying, well, geez, he's so far ahead of the curve in terms of, you know, how he's called games this year. Or, I'll give you a good example. What drove me nuts watching the Kansas City game, especially after halftime, after watching the second quarter, I'm like, okay, great. Like, they seem to be leaning into what Malik Willis does well. You see the balance between, you know, one of the best running backs in the game and a really young quarterback. There was some protection there in terms of, you know, how the game was being called. And then the second half, it felt, I didn't even understand what happened. I was like, what happened? Where did the offensive game plan go? And was it just a matter of the Chiefs making adjustments and Todd Downing sitting there and going, yeah, we're not going to, you know, keep running, you know, what was working in the second quarter of this game? That to me is frustrating. Like, I get it if you're like, look, they're going to make adjustments, can't keep doing the same thing. But it didn't feel like that's what really happened in the game. It didn't feel like a, you know, hey, I'm looking at a great adjustments coach, or I'm looking at a situation where you look at the Bears right now. They've kind of figured out, okay, well, here's what Justin Fields does well. Let's curve the offensive scheme as much as we can to, you know, just get what we can out of him and be competitive in games moving forward. You saw it with the development of Jalen Hurts. If Malik Willis is going to be on the field for you, and I thought he had little flashes, you know, even though he's, I'm sure Todd Downing would be like, be great if our wide receivers caught balls, you know, like, you still, I think, got to lean more into what that second quarter looked like. In terms of what his usage was, and it just felt like he didn't do that. So, again, I just think on balance, when I think of how the offensive coordinator position has unfolded for the Titans, this, you know, he's a cut below right now. And obviously he's got the rest of the season to try and change that and turn it around, but you do, as you said, chicken and egg. You have to determine, is this because the wide receiver position isn't very good? Is it because of you know, health of the offensive line at times, because just inexperience and at, you know, quarterback with this kid when he gets in there, and injuries at the quarterback spot. It's a good debate, but I think it's a meaningful debate. You know, once this season is over, you got to figure out where the mistakes were made, whether it's coaching or you can just solve it with personnel. By the way, AJ Brown, I will say this about the AJ Brown thing. I'm even stunned at how well that has worked out in Philadelphia with him. He and Tyreek Hill, I was like, man, this could be just the Titanic and the iceberg here with some of these contracts with wide receivers. And It just turns out the right guy gets paid and he goes into the right situation. It's a lot more seamless than I thought. So AJ, I wish AJ would just be happy and not feel so burned over it, because he's in a really good situation now, and it probably isn't the greatest thing to be on Twitter and taking shots.
Charles, it's great to talk to you again. Thanks for taking time to be with us this morning. Thanks for hanging with us throughout the season, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Coming up next, we'll react a little bit to what Charles Robinson had to say there. Got a lot of your thoughts to get to on our text line as well. And I might continue yelling at Joe Rexroad. All that ahead. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Join Big Joe Dubin and Elijah Campbell this Friday for the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy from 6 to midnight. They'll preview the big games and then take you through the night of high school football around the mid-state, playoff action around the state of Tennessee. It's the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Thanks to Charles Robinson for joining us. In the last segment, we'll have a lot more on the Titans to get into coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Right now, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. LD from McMinnville on the text line says, so we're supposed to believe a professional football coach in Todd Downing doesn't know how to use Malik Willis based on his skill set? Does he not have the tape? If not, he should visit hashtag Jared's film room.
This oh, is the yes, discussion he should.
From LD from McMinnville. Maybe Todd Downing could stand to spend some time in hashtag Jared's film room. That could be something that maybe is beneficial for all of us. Look, in all seriousness, like I agree with what Charles had to say. Like I do think the chicken and the egg phrase that Joe threw out there is a valid one right now in terms of, is it more the personnel? Is it more the coaching? You know, I think you could reach the conclusion, Joe, at the end of the season that maybe it's both. Like, you could certainly stand to get better in personnel. I don't think there's any question about this. But you've said this, Joe. Like, if you get to the end of this season, if you're the Titans and you've got another early playoff exit, if you feel like you can upgrade at offensive coordinator, like, you should do that. I understand the Titans have had success and they're probably going to win the division again for the third consecutive year. But, like, if you get to the end of the season, even if you do believe the majority of your problems are personnel-based, like if you look around and think that you can upgrade at offensive coordinator, you should upgrade at offensive coordinator. Like that's the way that things should operate in professional sports.
Well, yeah, I agree. And that's where it's going to be interesting with Mike Vrabel, who I think at this point around Nashville with Titans fans around the league, I think Vrabel is – like if you pulled – GMs or polled coaches or whoever around the NFL, I bet you Vrabel would land in the top five pretty consistently, right in that range among NFL coaches. I mean, he's earned that, but it is still pretty young in his NFL coaching career. And I think that's one of the things that'll be really interesting is the, even if it's someone isn't, it's not like a fireable situation, but do you move on sometimes if someone just isn't good enough and there's someone who could be better that you could bring in? Cause you're right. That is pro sports and it happens. And, there's certainly loyalty and longevity and all those things are valuable. And you look at like New England where Vrabel and Robinson, came up in the NFL. You look at some of those, Belichick, lieutenants before they got head coaching jobs and how long some of them were around. But there's going to be some times in the moving forward where like you got to make tough decisions. And so far Vrabel has basically promoted from within, and then when people have left, it's for better jobs for the most part. And Downing might be something that could get really interesting after this year, depending on how things go.
Well, and this is the other thing. I think a lot of us have assumed, we've talked about it here on the show, Tim Kelly being a part of that, and maybe that, at one point the Titans apparently wanted to interview him for the offensive coordinator job. Obviously, he got blocked by the Texans. Now he's the passing game coordinator. We've talked about how that kind of feels a little bit different than the Jim Schwartz situation felt like here with the Titans. I will say, though, it's tough to, like we've talked about this before, if you're putting blame on Todd Downing, I mean, Tim Kelly's here. He's part of the offense. The passing game's not good. I mean, he's the passing game coordinator. The passing game is the worst passing attack in the league. So what do you make of that?
Exactly. Like if you want, you can say, well, gosh, you know, there's a passing game coordinator, and that's bad. The running game looks good. Is that more Downing? I mean, somebody, I think it was, I don't remember which show, if it was the Midday Show or if it was Fenton and Company, but somebody asked, what about this rumor? I think it was to Derek. I think it was to D-Mace. It was like, what about this rumor that it's Tim Kelly is the one calling the first half plays, and then Downing's calling the second half plays.
Get in there.
Oh, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy of those who want Downing fired. It's clearly that's got to be the case. When things are working, it's the other guy. When they're not working, it's Downing.
Can you imagine Vrabel just be like, yeah, we're just going to keep going. Tim's doing a great job in the first half. We're waiting for Todd to get up to speed in the second half.
Yeah. Todd, I keep giving you these second half chances, and you keep screwing it up, man. I might have to give Tim three quarters now, and I'll only give you the fourth quarter, which is the most important quarter in the game. But I'll still give it to you because that makes a whole bunch of sense. Oh my goodness! By the way, speaking of that, totally off topic, but I also got a question for the mailbag that was: do you think that Poile is making Hines play these AHL players so that they're tanking? I'm like, yes, that's totally what's going on.
We're getting to the bottom of it.
Yeah, we're finally, tell you what, this is Scotland Yard over here. Get that magnifying glass out. We're figuring it out, baby. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we'll continue this discussion. We'll also get into some of the other comments that Charles had about maybe some current ownership situations in the AFC South that could be very good news for the Titans as they move forward as well. All that coming up next. But first, Michelle Knezovic has a word from Superbook Sportsbook.
Yes, I do, Robbie. And listen, guys, we have got everything going on right now between football, basketball is kicking off, hockey's rolling, and soon enough, the World Cup is around the corner. So when it comes to sports, why don't you bet on Superbook? It's my favorite app, and there's no place to wager on all of it than Superbook Sports. And when you sign up, deposit, and wager all in the same day, Superbook will give you a bonus up to $1,000. That'll get you started off real nice. And when it comes to sport, the sports world is busy. It is time to get busy winning some money. So download the Superbook Sportsbook app or visit superbook.com to wager and win today. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789.